Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 296 of the Roguecast, recorded June 23rd, 2020. All humans are Dengars. We're back on our bi-weekly schedule.
Randy, you're the omnipresent centerpiece here. But I have not been in, like, this room recording for, like, a month.
Yeah. Well, that's because I know how to work the microphones and drive the Winnebago.
Yeah, you are, I don't know if y'all can't see this, but Randy is pulling giant levers and, like, tugging cords that make smoke come from places.
I like to think of myself as the Oracle of the Roguecast. In that Oracle? I know how to work a computer.
Oh, Oracle as in, yes. Babs.
Not as in someone who foretells things. Yes. Because if I were to foretell things, it would be, we're going to be a bi-weekly podcast from now on. Yeah. I mean, it's possible we'll get back to weekly. We are slowly seeing an uptick in comics. In fact, this week is a pretty
puffy week, yes.
It's almost a real week.
Yeah, and there's some good stuff in there.
There absolutely is. We'll get to that when we talk about comics. But also, because we have, like, five more distributors of comics and games now, it's like all our work is spread out throughout the week, as it used to be concentrated on, like, Mondays and Thursdays. And
yeah, y'all, Randy is going to die.
Yeah.
He's going to die of all our new distributors, of which he has to do the hands-on thing for most of it. So
there's a lot more calling and emailing and hand-holding and processing orders. Like, it's all a lot more work behind the scenes. Hopefully,
yes.
Relatively invisible to people.
Right.
Store.
We're trying real hard.
This, in fact, is the last week that DC is shipping through Diamond.
Right.
So next week will be a skip week for DC, and the week after that we'll start getting from their new distributor. We are doing DC Comics on Tuesday, so as we record this, the DC Comics are out on the shelf for new buyers.
Yep.
And then everything else is still a Wednesday release, and I believe that is going to stay the same. But yeah, it's crazy times. But we like to occasionally find time to sit down and yammer about pop culture and comics. And
sometimes you got to find a little moment of calm in the storm.
That's right. This is not that, but we're going to rapidly rush through a podcast.
Yes.
All right. So yeah, it's just me and Dave this week. We've been alternating with, like, me and Dave, me and Nick. Occasionally we bring in Anna. So we're going to talk about some trailers that have been putting together in our podcast topics message thing that we send to each other.
Yep.
So let's talk about Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think Bill and Ted is weirdly, like, after, like, Princess Bride, I think it's the most sort of liked property.
Yeah, people love Bill and Ted.
Yeah. Even if you're not like, oh, it's not really my thing, but I like that movie. Like, yeah. Everybody kind of at least likes it. And I think kind of wished it well. Everybody likes Keanu.
Yep.
And everybody is completely neutral about
Alex Winters.
he is neither a monster nor he's a savior.
Here's the thing. He's not gotten himself canceled in all this time. Therefore, he's better than most.
Right. He's or at least good at covering his tracks. So this is a fun little trailer that doesn't show much. Other than, for me, a slight bit of sadness at saying, I'm like, oh, they are kind of old.
Yeah. Well, it is funny, the notion of Bill and Ted, that basically they were supposed to be these meathead musicians who accidentally saved the universe with their harmonious rock.
Yep.
And the premise of this is, yeah, they didn't do that.
Right. And they're the like future elder councils of the future people are like, you have failed us.
Yes.
you didn't live up to expectations. And so they get the notion that they need to get this done, and that the solution is to steal it from their future selves who've already done it.
I have to admit, seeing this
premise,
it made me a little sad.
Yeah.
Because I like the ending of Bogus Journey. I don't love anywhere near as much as I love the original Bill and Ted. But I like the ending where they went out of time, and they learned, and they did the big concert, and then we saw the, like, all the pieces starting to happen in these newspaper headlines. I like that they had achieved their goals.
Right.
And then to reveal now, like, oh no, actually they're just a couple slacker losers. I'm like, it undercuts the sweetness of the Bill and Ted.
Right.
But yet, it means we get a third Bill and Ted movie with our current daddy, Keanu, that everybody loves.
Yep.
And Alex Winter gets a paycheck, and that's a good thing.
Do we know if there's going to be someone cast in the role of a Rufus or Rufus type?
I don't think so. They've definitely...
Not that you can easily replace George Carlin.
It's a shame to have lost George Carlin. You know who I would like?
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt.
I could see that. I could absolutely see that.
I think he could.
There's a lot of comedians that I feel like that some people that kind of tread the line between adult and, like, kind of approachable.
Yeah.
Weirdly, Sarah Silverman, I think, could potentially do that.
I could see that. Also, I think the thing about Rufus was he was also their wise older guide. I don't think of a lot of older comedians who are like Jerry Seinfeld does not have the gravitas for it.
You know, this is weird because he just did a very serious kind of like special. But Dave Chappelle is also someone who I think could potentially fill the Rufus role.
Because
just like Carlin, he's kind of a stoner comedian,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I can sort of see that,
he kind of was the smart stoner.
A little bit counterculture, too, which was cool. That's not a bad pick. Also, if you want to go a completely different way and just be like Rufus' son,
yeah,
John Mulaney.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I could see that.
but anyway, I don't know that they did any of that. It looks like it might just be the future council.
And I hope that, by the way, that you know, I think that the hopefully this will end with them sort of doing their uniting thing.
Yeah.
What I actually think would be fun, because they probably wanted, like, if it's successful, to do still another one.
Maybe.
Is they should go ahead and bring them into their harmonious future and have it be this crazy sci-fi wild ride if they do another one.
That'd
be like
fun.
It's like all in the city of the future.
Demolition Man the musical?
It's something like that, yeah. You know what this trailer didn't show, but which I understand that there's going to be like a lot of... Like, aren't they using a lot of bands in this movie? Like,
oh, it makes sense.
I think, like, actual bands will appear in it. They probably, I think they, like, go to them for ideas and stuff. Like, let's go talk to Aerosmith. Let's go talk to whoever.
That's fun. It is just a teaser.
Yeah. The other weird thing in it is they meet, like, what, jailhouse versions of themselves that are all super ridiculously swole.
Buff and tattooed, yeah.
And, yeah, I suspect that's from what feels to me like a montage sequence where we're going to see many different iterations of Bill and Ted.
That'd be great.
And I think that would be awesome.
I hope they reference some of Keanu's other roles. It'd be great if they find a Bill and Ted where he is actually, like, the
John Wick. Or, like, contract killers or something like that. they do say of the music created by these prisoners that it was like pretty dark. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe those are like death metal Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a fun enough trailer. I kind of wanted it to be a little punchier, but it's not bad.
Yeah. As a reveal teaser, it's not too bad.
That's
Who knows
true.
When it's ever coming out?
I yeah, mean, right.
We, everything movie is on hold right now, so
we need them to save our time.
Yes. The other trailers are all for stuff that is more like, can come out in our COVID worlds. So it's like video games and a TV show. So, Sony did a big reveal for their PS5 that's coming out at holiday times.
Right.
And one of their big games is Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales, which is by Insomniac Games, which they did the Spider-Man game, which was great. And there's a little bit of...
Confusion?
Yeah, maybe deliberate confusion. Like
we don't know if it's its own game or I have heard that it was. I thought I had heard it was definitively, essentially a big expansion for the existing Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure.
Here's the thing: the people who did the Spider-Man game really just nailed it. They brought Miles in a really good way.
Miles is in it.
Miles is in it. Yeah,
played. That's cool. But you don't get to play as him.
No, because you don't get his powers till the very end.
Got it.
He's in as Miles. You actually get to play him.
Cool.
Like, there's a bit where you have to like go through a stealth your way past some goons.
Oh, but you do actually get to play him even if he's not spidery yet.
Got it. And then
one
of the big reveals in the game is that he gets his spider powers.
That's cool.
And I guess in some of the DLC, he's being trained by Peter to be Spider-Man. So this seems to be the next iteration of it, which is cool. I would rather this was like a full-on sequel that is Miles and Lee and Peter as a support.
Right, where they like you know, all the game mechanics are dedicated to his powers and stuff.
But the trailer looks good, the gameplay looks good, and I know that a lot of people would love, like my son will love being able to play as Miles.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's really cool.
And the you know, of course, it's PS5, so it looks gorgeous. I'm hoping that one of the reasons it's confusion is that it is actually going to be DLC that I can get on my PS4 without having to buy a PS5 to play this game.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'm a late adopter on these systems.
Same.
So I will probably get a PS5, but I might get it like a year after it's come out or something.
Same. And I much as I love a Miles Morales game,
if this is
a smaller game, like if this was actually, if this is Spider-Man 2 Miles Morales, if it is full featured as that Spider-Man game, but it's a full story, all that stuff, that might almost get me to buy a PS5. That would almost get me to do it.
Yeah.
But if it's just DLC, then yeah, it's going to be a wait, and I'll play it when it's a Sony's Greatest Hits for $20. also, we saw a reveal trailer for Star Wars Squadrons.
Yep.
Which I think, Dave, you and I were both like, what is this? Is this basically like an updated X-Wing versus TIE Fighter? Is it Is it multiplayer? Is it single player? And so we watched the trailer, which is good. It's all gorgeous, as always, with the Star Wars games.
Primarily cutscenes.
Yeah, these are all cutscenes.
And jumping around between, like, Empire and Rebel pilots.
Right, and it's post Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
The Death Star has fallen, and it is, like, the Rebels are doing cleanup and starting to establish the Republic, and the Imperials are trying to claw back what seems like a lost war.
Right.
Which is a fun idea. So we looked at some of the gameplay just to see what it looked like.
Yep.
And it turns out it is a solo campaign, but you jump between factions. You'll play a Rebel pilot and an Imperial pilot.
Yeah.
The story sort of continues, which is really cool.
And it sounds like they'll then there is like multiplayer.
It's a 5-player squadron multiplayer.
Yep.
Which sounds like a lot of fun.
You'll group up with other people. Presumably that means it's like two of you could be in TIE fighters, two in TIE interceptors, and one in a TIE bomber or something like that.
I bet it's still factional. I bet you have a squadron of Rebels or a squadron of Imperials.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that not fit what I was just saying?
I thought you were saying, like, two of you would be in a TIE bomber. I thought you were saying, two of you would be an X-Wing, two of you would be in a TIE fighter.
No, I just mean if you were trying to get to 5 total, that might be what your loadout would be.
Different variations of a TIE fighter or an X-Wing.
But yeah, you could be 5 regular TIE fighters if that's what your squadron was good at.
I love five plain TIE fighters, Dave.
I do 5 TIE bombers, and we just get wrecked.
Yeah.
I
like X-Wing with orange vanilla flavor.
The CG cutscenes are kind of cool. They show the sort of like training, and like there's lots of just cool shots of them flying around in these really cool environments. But they showed what I think of as the right stuff walk, where you've got like 5 Imperial pilots, you know, and they have all slightly different uniforms depending on like what they pilot, and then 5 Rebel pilots facing off, doing the march. In slow mo,
and one of the Rebels is a Trandoshan.
Oh yeah, that's
otherwise
right.
Otherwise known
right.
as a Bosk.
Yep,
like a Bosk.
Are all humans Dengars?
All humans are Dengars.
the bounty hunters explain all the different races of Star Wars.
Yes, all insectoids are Forlombs.
Yes,
all droids are IG-88s.
Yep, even Boba Fett is actually a Dengar.
Boba Fett is a Dengar. Yeah.
Man, if you don't know your bounty hunters, what we just said there sounded like gibberish. that does sound kind of cool. I will say there was more piloting going on in like both the last two Battlefront games I played had ground combat and the ability to jump into ships. The ship stuff was always a little half-assed.
Yeah.
And so giving it a dedicated game, I think, is a good idea. If they pull it off, it needs, you know, like, I don't want it to be quite as simulationist, and I don't think it is, as the X-Wing TIE Fighter games
of the 90s. Yeah, I can never get into that because it was
the
too 90s. Hardcore.
It was a little bit more like a flight sim in those days, and I admired the games from afar, but you had to learn how to, like, scan things, move your shields around, and I'm like, oh my god.
I respect it, but I don't enjoy it.
Yeah, right. that would be, like, if I was doing a turn-based game of some sort, I would maybe be into some of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have to remember, Dave, I'm a dolt.
when it comes to this, I am also doltish. And yeah, I basically want to fly around and have fun blowing up stuff. Yep. So there needs to be a lot of sort of AI manned drones out there that I can explode for a quick thrill. And then hopefully I'll get good enough to be able to take down actual players in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, what's is this coming out on everything, I assume?
I think so, yeah. There was no strong indication, so yeah. And then we saw the teaser for Apple Plus's Foundation.
Right, that is to say it's the adaptation of Isaac Asimov's famous sci-fi Foundation trilogy.
Yeah. So this is...
Neither of us have read.
Neither of us has read. I've read his Robot series, and it is quite good, but when you post about Dave on Facebook, all your friends are like, yeah, it's dry, don't read it.
Yeah. Is there like a summary somewhere, Randy, of like the Foundation series?
So I'm looking up...
Because I could describe what's in the trailer, but I don't know like how they... So like if I were to read a dust jacket of it.
Foundation follows a band of exiles who discover the only way to save the Galactic Empire from destruction is to defy it.
Okay, well, that's kind of generic sounding, but...
this was early sci-fi, so...
Right, but I also imagine that he is not doing, like... Everybody says it's kind of, like, serious world-building stuff, so I know it's not, like... Although it influenced Star Wars, I know it probably doesn't feel like Star Wars at all.
Right. So, what's interesting...
There was big, big cityscapes, and, like, it seemed like a far-flung future.
It looks gorgeous. Like, they're clearly spending a lot of money on this. Apple TV does not have a hit yet, they've got, like, The Morning Show, and they have this new Cartoon Central Park that I love, but they're even at $5 a month, which is pretty cheap for a streaming service, they've not had their big hit. So it's weird that they're holding on until like 2021.
Yeah, that is a little odd.
But I'm sure it's just taking time to get all the post-production. But the trailer for this looked really spectacular. Mm-hmm. The cast is like Jarrett Harris from Mad Men and various other things. I was trying to find the actress who's the lead, but it looks really good.
Yeah, it's a teaser enough that you can't tell a lot from it.
Yeah.
But it looked like there's a vibe of quality and good acting in it. There's like, even just in the few lines delivered, there's a bit of subtlety to the acting. I think that this is not, the vibe is not quite at all like The Expanse, but it's serious sci-fi in that sense, just farther down the line, like 1,000 years down the line or something.
It's not the weirdest comparison, I don't think, no.
It's certainly, it's closer to that than it is to, you know, it's not cyberpunk like, right. What's that one? Cyberpunk. Altered Carbon. And it's definitely not sci-fi, space fantasy like Star Wars. It's going to be, but it may be like Dune and other stuff like that. That might be.
I definitely see
the
comparison to Dune. It does seem to be sort of that beloved, but maybe dry, and we'll see
right.
the adaptation
and a
is.
Little bit of a kind of Game of Thrones-ish vibe like Dune might have.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll see. Anyway, it's a good trailer.
Good trailer. Check it out.
It's not till 2021, so we got a little while.
Yeah, relax.
I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, go ahead and get a snack and then watch the trailer. It's not going anywhere.
Speaking of other streaming services, Cobra Kai is a show that you and I both watched and enjoyed. I had to be dragged into it because, like, why are you celebrating bullies? And I was so wrong.
Yeah. Great first season, which I believe is all that either of us have seen.
Yeah, I watched an episode, maybe two, of season two because it was on YouTube Red. It was on YouTube free for a little while.
Yep.
But, yeah, I don't want to pay for YouTube just to see Cobra Kai.
And now we needn't.
And now we need, because YouTube was never going to become a streaming platform. That was a try on their part. They've clearly given up on it.
YouTube owns what it does.
Yeah.
But which is, should not be trying to replace Netflix and Hulu.
It already owns all the children.
Yes, it's true.
But
if tomorrow it was like, they like ran a video that was like, children, destroy them all, we'd
they
be dead.
Would. They would. It would be Order 66 for children, yes.
Yes.
So it's like a reverse Order 66, actually. Instead of killing the younglings kill animals.
It's their day. It can only help the current world.
Yes.
Now it's running, it's moving to Netflix.
It's moving to Netflix.
We're going to get season one and two, even as season three finishes out or
no,
continues.
No, season three hasn't come out yet.
But it's, that's going to come out on YouTube?
Yeah, it's going to come out on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
So season one and two are moving to Netflix, and then at some point later this year, season three is going to drop. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of season two.
Yeah, I'll probably rewatch season one. What was it? Half hour episodes, roughly?
I think so. Yeah.
And it's like a drama comedy. It's it still continues the vibe of the.
It feels like Karate Kid in a way that I don't know how they managed to do it.
Right. It's still got heart, and yet it does start to show things from the side, the perspective of Johnny,
yep.
who's now this washout drunk,
yep.
who's trying to get his life back together and form his own dojo. There's a bunch of great supporting characters, including new students. There's the family of Ralph Macchio's character.
Yeah, Ralph Macchio's in it, playing Daniel LaRusso, and he's a car dealer now.
Yeah, and he's a little bit cheesy and a little full of himself. You know, he's kind of become a little privileged, but he's not super wealthy.
He's
a modest success,
and he's still likable, even though he's kind of snotty. Like it's,
right,
and that's one of the things Cobra Kai did really well was like. All the characters have their bad moments and their good moments.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, I think neither you nor I thought we were worried about the balance it was going to strike, and it ended up finding a balance that I wouldn't have guessed even existed.
I was violently skeptical about this show, and it turns out I was super wrong.
Yep. So everybody should check it out.
This is one of those things, Dave. I'm used to like going to streaming and finding that something I used to be able to watch is gone. Like, I'm used to the downside of streaming services changing rights and that kind of thing.
Right.
This is the rare upside where something is moving to a network I already have.
You're right. So all you have to do is sit back and make a snack.
Indeed. while I'm waiting for that foundation teaser.
No hurry.
Stephen King has made an announcement of sorts.
It's just like a tweet or something, right?
He tweeted out, he said, A best novel idea I never wrote and probably never will is I, Jason, the first-person narrative of Jason Voorhees and his hellish fate, killed over and over again at Camp Crystal Lake. What a hellish existential fate. Just thinking about the legal thicket one would have to go through to get permissions makes my head ache, and my heart that too. But gosh, shouldn't someone tell Jason's side of the story? There's a hilarious piece. This is on Entertainment Weekly. He also suggested that Blumhouse could do it as a movie, and that Joe Lansdale, Texas novelist Joe Lansdale, said, "Never cared for Jason, but it is an interesting idea."
Yep.
And then Patton Oswalt jumped on board and is like, he's like, "I want this right now. Let's do one of those Ace Payback doubles. My half will be either Leatherface, How to Make an American Quilt, or Michael Myers, Babysitter's Club."
It's hilarious. So here's the thing. I think that Stephen King has never really done a licensed thing other than to occasionally, like, he wrote like a chapter of an X-Men comic during the 80s. That was their special for World Hunger.
It was like two pages. Yeah.
Yeah. And like every once in a while he's like done some Barry thing like that, but he's never written I don't think he ever wrote like an episode of Buffy or whatever, you know, right?
And you've clearly not seen Stephen King's slash fic that mashes up Star Trek and Buffy.
Oh, neat. Anyway, I think I'm like Joe Lansdale. I don't care for Jason. I love horror movies, but slashers have never done much for me.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a particular kind of weird. I can only say like kind of conservative, anti-sex. Teens must die sort of thing. I don't even. It came out of weird societal pressures, and there's interesting things I've read about like why they're so popular, but I just don't particularly get my jollies by watching teens get stabbed. Some of my fellow horror fans do. And I'm not judging him.
Mm-hmm.
That said, Stephen King can lends a lot of depth to just about anything he writes.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see him do it.
Me too.
As a weird experiment.
Yeah.
I think that... he would kind of like... If he approached it the way he approached any of his novels, but maybe with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek and, you know, some enjoyment of the qualities that people like in them, you know, some creative deaths here and there...
Yeah.
But also whatever is ticking inside his head, or maybe it would be told from other characters. I don't even know how he'd do it. But what we're talking about this off mic, and I was saying when he said that there's a legal thicket or whatever that he scares him.
Right.
I have this feeling that his mere announcement of it would be enough to clear the path.
Yeah, I think
and
so
I
too.
Bet that he said that maybe thinking that, and so that he's like, "You come to me."
Yeah.
Come and tell me that it's done, that it's legally ironed out, and I'll write your book. I'll write your damn book. anyway, all I can say is that I will buy this if they put it out.
Yeah, I am not a huge fan of either Jason Voorhees or Stephen King, really.
You'd borrow it from me if I told you it was good, right?
Yes, I would. And then I would let it sit on my stack of books, just like the Michelle Obama biography that I've had for 6 months.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where, like, maybe if you, like, read the first page and you're like, "Oh, that's not an interesting idea," then it might suck you in, or it might not.
Maybe, but Dave, I have to rewatch, 11 seasons of Top Chef that just dropped on Hulu, so...
Well, we do live in difficult times. 2020 is a tough one.
All right, our last bit of news... is related to Cyberpunk 2077. This got another bit of like disappointing news for gamers in that they just delayed it again. Not by a lot, just to November 19th.
Okay. So it's still this year. There
it's
are like
this year.
Endless announcements of things, of course, being pushed back right
yep.
now. So in the big scheme of things, that's not too bad a pushback.
I'm super excited for this. It's got Cyberpunk author Mike Pondsmith as a consultant.
Who's making it?
Project Red, the guys who did the Witcher series.
Okay. Those guys know how to make a game, I guess.
Or CD Projekt is the name of it.
So it's going to be a real...
People who know what they're doing.
It's going to be a full-on A-listy game.
They've showed a trailer which has Keanu Reeves playing Johnny Silverhand, the rocker boy of the future.
Mm-hmm.
They've showed... There's like an hour-long gameplay video that was released that's amazing.
Ugh.
Like, it looks great. And Dark Horse has the rights to, like, there's an art book coming out, they're doing some pins and that kind of stuff. Turns out they're also doing a comic book, which is what brings us to talking about it here. Cullen Bunn, along with artist Miguel Valderrama, are doing a 4-issue limited series called Cyberpunk 2077 Trauma Team.
Okay.
Which I assume will be dealing with all the people suffering trauma from the darkness of the future, and it'll be about a cyberpunk therapist.
Interesting notion.
I'm sorry, it says here, no, that is not what it is. It's actually Trauma Team International, which is basically their dock wagons. They're guys who fly around in ships and rescue rich people for healthcare.
These cyberpunk futures always seem too real.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I'm I'm curious to check it out. I'm actually looking forward to the World of Cyberpunk hardcover. I'm very much looking forward to the game. It was supposed to be released on my birthday. That didn't happen. One of many disappointments of my birthday this year.
Thanks, 2020, you yeah. asshole.
But yeah, I'm excited about it. I think Colin Bunn will write a good comic.
Yeah, he's a little hit and miss with me, but he's got plenty enough hits that, I'd be interested to see what he's got to do.
Play me the hits, Colin Bunn. Only the hits.
What's that from?
I don't know, nothing.
All right.
the hits, like a radio thing.
Okay, yeah, sure. Are you actually asking me to name him?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was telling you.
I was like, I can do some.
I was telling you, Colin Bunn, to play the hits.
Yes.
No, Colin Bunn has in our bestseller section, he has worked for every publisher.
Yeah.
And he has good stuff at Marvel. He's got some good stuff at DC. Wrote that Sinestro series I know you liked.
Yeah, I dug it.
He's got some really fun stuff at Boom, Image, Dark Horse. Like, he is a workhorse. That guy has done so much work.
He's the ultimate freelancer. Yeah. He's a merc for hire. He walks the Badlands, roaming, looking for story for editors who in need of a story that have also been trapped in the Badlands.
Yes. They were all in the Badlands. It's called 2020.
Oh, my God.
All right. And we're going to, on that apocalyptic note, take a break. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the last couple weeks. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 17th, and Wednesday, July 22nd, and also Tuesday, July 16th, and Tuesday, July 21st, because DC confused everyone by start moving their release date to Tuesday.
I don't even know what you just said in there, but suffice to say, well, we're talking comics that are hitting this week, as well as a little bit from the previous week, right?
Correct, yes. Okay. And we're going to start with, there's actually a fair number of, like, first issues in here.
Talking about this week, right?
And last week. There's three from last week, and there's, like, five from this week.
What are we going to start with?
So let's start with Image. Let's start with That Texas Blood.
But this week.
This is this week.
Okay,
we're
talking
about this week's comics.
Hit it.
That Texas Blood is written by Chris Condon, who I believe is a Hollywood guy or someone like that. He is a film guy.
Okay.
Maybe. And he is working with Jacob Phillips, who I believe is Sean Phillips' son.
Sean Phillips, the ultimate collaborator of Ed Brubaker, right?
Right. So this feels like
basically...
looks like an Ed Brubaker book. It is about an older sheriff who had small town Texas. He had a shooting that still sticks with him. There's something going on where some other guy kills himself. It looks like a pretty straight crime book.
Yeah.
With a little bit of, like, spookiness in it.
Southwestern crime and a sequence that, like, either looked like it might be some weird supernatural thing or could... I don't know if it's, like... Is it possible that was dream stuff?
I think it's the dream stuff.
Okay.
Or a daydream or something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is... His main character is sort of likable, older sheriff, kind of not unlike the guy in...
No Country for Old Men. Yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones' character.
Yeah, and it's almost like the... If you imagine that a camera was kind of winding in and around and just following him during his day, not that he's addressing it, just that it's sticking with him during the day, and it's a kind of a cool format, I thought.
Jacob Phillips acquits himself well on art. I mean, he's not his dad, but he is pretty good here.
Yeah.
In some ways, honestly, it reminds me a little bit of Steve Dillon in some of it. The shot of the guy coming out of the cave with his intestines out.
Yeah,
that's
you like
a
that,
Steve Dillon shot.
Like a preacher kind of bit of gore there.
Yeah. So it is a little bit, he's got a little bit of that too. I would say fans of Preacher, fans of No Country for Old Men, and if you like the Brubaker Phillips stuff in general.
Yeah, like Criminal and stuff like that.
Worth giving that one a look.
Yep.
Dave, you want to pick one up from this week?
Sure. So one of the things that I enjoyed quite a bit, unexpectedly, I haven't been keeping up with the DC 100-page 80th anniversary specials that they've done for Catwoman, Wonder Woman, Robin, but occasionally I've flipped in and they have sort of best of creators working on them, and I like them. This week they do Green Lantern. And maybe they've been doing this in all of them. I think they probably have. But there's 10 stories in here. Each of my bet is around, 15 pages or so. And
it's got to be around 10. It's a 100-page spectacular.
Oh, it's right. They give you the count. That's funny. It actually feels like some of them are longer, but they're nicely done.
Maybe some of them are shorter and some are... Actually, I can tell some of them are shorter and some of them are longer.
Ah, okay. So each one is generally written by somebody associated with that, notably with that character. Although, the Alan Scott one that starts it, which I actually quite liked and did something kind of unexpected with it, is written by James Tinian. But some of the other ones, Jeff Johns writes the Hal Jordan story, Cullen Bunn, who we just talked about, who did the Sinestro comic, does a Sinestro story. Denny O'Neil, in what may have been like one of the last things he ever wrote, Denny O'Neil, who passed away recently, does a Green Lantern, Green Arrow story, tributing the Hard Traveling Heroes era. Ron Mars writes a Kyle Rayner story. Now, I haven't read quite all of these. There's a few that I haven't gotten around to, but also mentioned in this are, so Guy Gardner is in it, Kilowog, Simon Boz and Jessica Cruz. There's if they've been a Green Lantern, like if they're one of the big ones, then they're in here. Anyway, I liked it quite a bit. I think I'm even going to pick it up.
You know, as I look through Dave, I just happened to see the ending of the Geoff Johns one, which is great. The story.
That one I did really enjoy.
There's also, I love all the pinups.
Uh huh. There's pinups that include the lead from, was it from Far Sector?
Yeah, and from Green Lantern Legacy, the All Ages one. Like, they definitely covered all the Green Lanterns in here.
Yep.
There's a Raphael Grandpa version of Hal Jordan, which looks really cool.
Yep. Oh, and there's a little Secret Files thing in the end that kind of walks you through all the characters. In case you don't know some of these, there's even includes the lesser known Green Lanterns that show up, like, oh, who's that weird crystal dude who was in the background of that story? They will tell you in
that
this.
That's pretty cool. You know how it pains me to say anything nice about DC right now. Yeah. This is a good-looking package.
Well, as always, there's a little bit of separation, of course, from the DC, the company that's maybe not so cool right now, and the DC creators who are immensely talented creators.
Right, but I've hated DC Comics for like a decade now.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what? I know you also reread Rebirth recently, and like me,
I did.
I had to acknowledge it's really, really one of the best Green Lantern stories.
I am primed for the Green Lantern HBO Max series, which will come out in like 2021.
Yeah. They
and I'm digging Stargirl, which is such a JSA nostalgia thing too.
People have been telling me that is a pretty good tribute to JSA. Well, yeah. What else we got this week?
All right, so let's talk about another crime book. This is Dead Body Road: Bad Blood. This is a sequel of sorts. There was a previous book called Dead Body Road. It's an Image book. It's by Justin Jordan. Had a different artist. I don't think it ties in. I think this is actually a completely different story. Mm-hmm. But basically, it is your classic like. It opens with some goon killing somebody, and he's like, go find this guy's sister. And they're like, you know who his sister is? Like, I know who she was. And his sister's now running a bar, and she's clearly this ex-badass. Mm-hmm. And a bad guy comes looking for him, for her, and looking for her brother. And she's clearly going to get dragged into this. Like, she was a criminal who tried to get out, and now she's going back in.
Fair enough. That is a pretty good launch point for a crime story. I really like this art. I mean, I haven't read the story, but the art is really top.
Yeah, it's really good. Justin Jordan's a good creative thinker. I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he talks a lot about his process stuff. He definitely knows how to subvert tropes. This is very tropey, but in a fun way.
Yeah.
Like, if you like crime books, I would definitely want to give that one a look. Dave, you want to talk about the Marvel book? I know we both really enjoyed this week.
Yeah, this would maybe be my favorite of the stuff I've read so far. This is a second sort of prelude of like a few things leading up to Marvel's Empire series. This is called Avengers Empire Number Zero.
Isn't it Empire?
Randy refers to the fact that they spelled Empire with a Y.
I'm not sure why.
I'm not quite sure why either, but maybe. Oh, you know what? Is it like a funeral pyre?
Oh.
It is falling apart. The second part of it, and so for Dave, people who don't know,
I liked making fun of Marvel like they were dumb, and now I feel like we're the dumb ones.
Are we the dumb dumbs?
Let's erase this whole thing.
So, for those who don't know, the Avengers, or that is to say, the Empire crossover that's going on this summer from Marvel. The biggest, simplest way to explain it is that the Kree and Skrull empires, always at war with each other, seem to be uniting under the shared heritage Hulkling from Marvel Universe. And I'm imagining there's going to be all kind of Game of Thrones-ish power plays to manipulate him and decide what these two mega empires will do, and if they can even stick together. And it's normally the kind of thing that I don't think neither you nor I are like innately interested in. Like,
no.
The Kree-Skrull War as a kind of a has a history with people who were reading it in the 70s, and that was a little before my time, and it's mostly seemed a little esoteric and weird. That there are plant people in it called the Kotati. There's the Swordsman, who was like an Avenger, who was like the guy who trained Hawkeye, and he died to bit to save them.
I could
There's
not
the
be,
Celestial Madonna.
I could not be less interested in any of this,
but,
as a general rule.
But
this is so good.
This the issue zero they did, and then this kind of brings the Avengers into play in it. But basically, the issue zero they did kind of retold all of that history in a kind of cool way through Skrull infiltrators on Earth.
Yep.
The family from Meet the Skrulls. And now this first issue, basically the Avengers get summoned to the blue area of the moon, which has a big meaning for the Kree, and anybody who's read Marvel Comics has probably at least seen it.
And it turns out it's not the blue area anymore.
Right, it is overgrown, and like it's like this kind of beautiful gardenscape that's like this really beautifully drawn alien kind of garden that's grown over the Kree city there. And there's all kind of, they're called there on a distress signal. And essentially, in investigating it, it has obviously has something to do with the Katati, those weird plant people that, that were entwined in the Kree Skrull permanently, because they were there at the dawn of the war. They are there. There are some secret guests there. And it gets the Avengers aware, essentially, that there's, like, big fleet, battle fleets massing and stuff like that, and that they are going to have to figure out what they are going to do about it. So this is all about how it is seen from the Avengers' perspective. The Avengers right now that includes, what, Iron Man, Cap, Black Panther, She-Hulk, Captain Marvel, and Thor, I think.
And Ghost Rider.
Oh, and Ghost Rider, yeah.
So it's interesting. It's kind of a classic team in some ways, with She-Hulk subbing in for Hulk,
yep.
Captain Marvel adding in, which kind of makes sense, and then Ghost Rider's like the weird outlier.
Right, it's like a Defenders character snuck in.
Yeah, he didn't belong there. But I like that the team is made up of... I could use, say, a Black Knight or a Hercules.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They did... I think neither you nor I have been reading Jason Aaron's Avengers run.
Right.
But Al Ewing, who wrote this, who's written a ton of good stuff lately...
He's writing Immortal Hulk.
Immortal Hulk is the big one.
Yeah.
He used Ghost Rider as, like, the newbie who kind of once or twice is like, what's this all about? And they can kind of use that to get some exposition in. So he's actually used pretty well as far as being the kind of newbie on the team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it's kind of cosmic stuff, but what I've found is sometimes their cosmic stuff is a little bit unapproachable to me, and they have been lensing it through the kind of human, the human characters within it, and that's what I like. So when they talked about this Kree-Skrull war in the previous Prelude issue, it was from the perspective of those, like, on-the-ground Skrull infiltrators.
Yeah.
And here we see the Avengers meeting up with, like, an old friend-slash-foe who has a history with them, and it's kind of an emotional thing for them, and that, like, these kind of big cosmic things mean something to me when they mean something to the characters, you know?
Yeah.
And then here they do. There's also cool fights in it. There's actually a really good battle. That kicks it off.
Oh yeah, and I love their swordsman. Like, I'm not a fan of that character either.
Yeah,
but the way they play him here and the new design for him, I think looks great.
Yeah,
Edgar Ross is great on the art, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. I was trying to think who's that artist who worked on Young Avengers. It reminded me a bit of
not Alan Heinberg. That's the writer.
Right,
Steve McNiven.
No, it wasn't McNiven.
No, it's Josh Middleton. No,
nope.
It's another one of the cross-gen guys, though.
Yeah, it's. I can't say it's not Olivier Coipel.
No.
But it reminds me of this person I can't name. That's some great radio. Anyway, yes, it's very good. It's that kind of really detailed art.
Are you sure it's the Steve McNiven?
Yep, I'm 100% sure. I'm thinking
Jim Chung.
Yeah, Jim Chung.
Jim Chung, who, by the way, also was a cross-gen guy.
Yeah, he did not Sojourn, not...
Sigil, maybe? Nope, not Sigil.
Maybe Sigil?
Yeah, we're terrible at this.
He did the sci-fi one.
That was Sigil.
Okay, then he did Sigil.
There was another sci-fi one. I'm looking up his Wikipedia now.
Just did Jim Chung and CrossGen?
Jim Chung, CrossGen. He worked on Scion.
Their names were not the most memorable, okay?
Let's erase all of this, including the part where we figured out the Empire meant Pyre. And let's make ourselves look really smart on top of all of this.
Yeah.
So we're back.
What I was going to say, though, is when you're talking about that art, is that one of the other things I like is when you're doing big sci-fi stuff, is that the landscapes and the situations that they're in look cool. Like, if they're in a big, cool spaceship, you want it to, like, be beautifully drawn
for sure.
And feel that way.
Yeah.
And this, the way this guy renders the blue area of the moon is fantastic. So,
yeah.
Again, a surprising recommendation on this prelude to their summer event.
Well, it's funny, because I think nobody's really talking about this. Nobody's super excited about it in the world at large. But I think you and I are, like, legit excited about seeing this play out.
Well, we have several customers, several subscribers who are down for the whole thing, which is a little bit of a bite. I think as usual. You're going to be able to read just like the main miniseries if you want.
But they shrunk it.
Did they?
Post-COVID, they shrunk the numbers. Because
there's a checklist that looked kind of big.
All the ads in here are old. It all says like May 2020.
Oh, these are outdated ads?
All the ads that are in here are for things that are not actually going to happen.
Okay, well, that's probably good then.
Yeah.
If it was a tighter, leaner event, I'd be down.
Their checklist is like the original plan, and now they've cut it way back.
Okay. Well, that's, again, that's kind of, this is all good stuff for me.
Yeah.
If they were forced to be a little, to like, not be so bloated.
Yeah.
Even a good miniseries can end up bloated. So, anyway, that's good. And do we know yet, Randy, is it Al Ewing who's doing the main series?
I don't know. And I think it is, but I'm not sure.
I hope it is. Anyway.
Me too.
What else you got?
All right, so I'm going to mention Sleeping Beauties,
yep.
Which is a new book from IDW by Stephen King and Owen King.
Yep.
This is it's sort of a modern-day riff on Sleeping Beauty. Basically, the premise is that there's a sleeping sickness that's fallen across the world. It affects women, and there's this small town where this one woman has walked out of the woods with a trail of carnage behind her. She's the only woman not falling asleep.
Yeah, so that's like a big kind of high concept mystery premise.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a what it reminds me of horror a little bit.
It reminds me of the kind of the premises that the Luna Brothers kicked off in some of their books when.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty cool mystery. I've not gotten around to reading it yet, but I dig it.
Yeah, and it's got very strange, disturbing artwork. So
it kind of feels like, well, no surprise that it could have like felt. Appropriate in the other King Hallowed Grounds, the Hill House comics.
Yeah.
It would not have been out of place there. But this one landed at IDW, so that's where to look for it.
Dave, what else you got?
Let's see. I don't know if I have a lot of number ones yet, but I do want to mention a special that came out this week. It's like actually an epilogue to Batman Killer Smile from the Jeff Lemire Black Label book.
Yeah.
Which I think we both liked.
Yeah, didn't get around to finishing, but I liked the first issue, and then things got crazy.
Things got crazy. But it was, you know, at its heart, it was about a guy in, like, Arkham Asylum, a doctor who was dedicated to trying to cure the Joker. And they said other people have tried, but, you know, he draws you into his web and he'll destroy you. And they were like, you have 2 weeks to do this. And then there's this weird twist that happens in the second issue where they're talking to him and they're like, you've been trying to do this for 2 years. And there's like all this weird mental games that Joker is messing with. Well, it ended and it had what I thought was a pretty satisfying ending. But now there's like a special, and I guess they probably must have had this in mind the whole time. It's the original creative team, I think.
Yes, it is.
And it's called Batman the Smile Killer. And I think, like, in some way, there's a reference to, like, a kid show that Bruce Wayne watched as, like, a kid that I think it's, like, one of these twisted, like, puppet shows kind of thing.
Okay, yeah.
But, like, that maybe the Joker had, like, manipulated him through it. I don't worry about, like, these Black Label books aren't necessarily canonical.
Right.
So they can probably do some stuff in there that they wouldn't otherwise. But I am led to believe that there's some kind of creepy twists going on in this. That maybe some reveals beyond even the reveals that were in the regular series. So anybody who was following Killer Smile should obviously pick this up.
Right. And then I want to mention the other sort of first issue. There's been three. This is the third of those Marvel Snapshots, which are basically a return to the world of Marvels, where you see Marvel through the eyes of people on the ground. This is... they're originally, like, they were Kurt Busiek. I think he's a curator listed on this one, but I think he's barely involved in this one. This is written by Mark Russell, who did, among other things, that Flintstones, the Wonder Twins.
Yeah, he is primarily known as being, like, a kind of an arch-satirist in comics.
Art is by Ramon Perez. The art is really, really nice. And this story takes place during the Mad Bomb story, which was an event that was a Kirby Captain America story where the Mad Bomb goes off in New York and turns everybody into sort of rage zombies. And this basically focuses on an African-American family. There's some dark stuff that happens with the mom and the baby, but also the, like, college-age son is working in their TV repair shop, who's, like, this genius. He's about to go off to college, the first their family to go off to college. And after the Mad Bomb devastates their neighborhood, the Avengers go to clean up, like, the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of the neighborhood of, I think it's Harlem or... something like that is basically kind of left behind.
Interesting.
And he's like, they don't have the money for him to go to college. He has to keep working in the TV shop. He gets recruited by AIM in a really hilarious scene and goes to work for them when they're like basically realize the heroes are not coming to Harlem. Like they're done. Their job is done.
Interesting.
And they're not doing the rebuilding.
There's an element to this that I don't know if it's meant to satirize or reflect any real societal thing, but there is something to be said for that. Basically, when people won't lend a hand to you, you'll look for any outstretched hand,
yep.
possibly even yep. not so good people.
Yep. Story plays out really well. I like it a lot. And they do a good thing here where they, it is presented as Captain America, and Captain America is sort of the representative of the Avengers here. And they give this perception of, well, Cap is maybe a little out of touch. He's like, oh, everything's fine. And when he meets this kid, and the kid is like, you know, everything wasn't fine, and that's kind of why I did this. I thought they did a nice job of like showing that without selling out Cap.
Right, without saying, Cap, you're a completely out of touch fool.
He's able to say, he's like, yeah, you know what? We got this wrong, but also this is not what we do. And I thought they did a good job of like, yeah, the heroes, like, they're not the rebuilders guys, maybe, that they are. Right. They are the guys who... He actually says, there's a great line where he's like, I always want to help. I want to help in all the ways I can, and I'm good at punching stuff.
You know what's weird?
Yeah.
This is a weird and had to be unintentional reflection of much of the debate going on about policing right yep. now, and about like whether we're asking too much of the police and that there should be other institutions that would be absorbing so many of the aspects of their job.
Yes.
There's no way they could have planned this.
No, although it's not like that isn't an issue that's been going around for years and years.
Right.
And
right.
I suspect that's why it...
It's just not usually quite addressed that
way.
So I just
want to mention, this is in the tail end of the book, so you could argue it's a spoiler, but I think it's just a good bit of dialogue. Cap sits down with a kid as they're doing some rebuilding stuff, and he's like, we never meant to abandon anybody, you know. And the kid's like, I know. He's like, it's just that, well, I'm really good at hitting things.
That's funny. That's a little bit of that sort of slightly dark humor that Mark Russell does like.
Yeah. This was great, as with all the Marvel snapshots, has been really great. And I thought this stuff might feel dated or, like, maybe not really relevant, but it's all really good.
Randy, it is not a first issue, but I think we should mention that Thor number 5... Which
yes.
has been anticipated by people. It got much delayed by COVID, but people have been really enjoying Thor by
Donny Cates,
and that issue finally made it out. I just
yes.
wanted to let people
yeah.
know it's a cool issue.
Well, because Thor number 4 came out, and it was this big thing where Thor and Galactus ran up against this thing that destroyed Galactus' universe, and then we had to wait 3 months to find out what happened
yep.
next. It was like Empire Strikes Back.
And it's a pretty cool issue. It's got a massive confrontation
yep.
And a big reveal at the end, which is kind of a neat bit addition to, I guess I'd say, Galactus lore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think people who've been waiting are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I know I did. I'm really enjoying Donny Cates' Thor. Also, super glad to see the return of Immortal Hulk,
mm-hmm.
speaking of Al Ewing. This is a focus on the leader. That goes through... Al Ewing's been doing this occasionally where he goes through Hulk history and some relenses stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically goes through all the various iterations of the leader to show where he's at right now.
Yeah.
Before bringing him in as a big bad guy for the current Immortal Hulk.
Oh, nice.
It's a good overview. It's in a good history of the leader if you've never read the character. And if you have, you'll recognize bits and pieces of the thing.
Very cool.
I like that a lot. Also, the return of Die, which comes back with number 11, which I think is...
That's Kieran Gillen's... It's sort of a dark fantasy world that people are from the real world are
yep.
pulled into.
I believe this is the start of the third story arc, so that's another one all long anticipated. Basically, a lot of stuff returned this week.
Yep. And I just want to randomly mention the issue 105 of Ninja Turtles that Sophie Campbell's been writing and drawing has a neat bit in it that was kind of... They've been setting it up, and I think maybe even discussed it in the previous issue, but the Turtles have been drifting apart after Splinter died, and they've been the whole last arc has been about them sort of coming back together in this town where a plague has created all these hybrid mutant people, so it's like mostly mutants there, and they're going to set up shop as the protectors of it, and specifically they're unifying under the idea of forming a new ninja clan that'll be kind of a righteous justice ninja clan, which they're calling the Splinter Clan, and I was
yeah.
like, oh man,
that's
cool.
That's cool. Is Sophie Campbell still doing art? I know that somebody
yep.
else... Oh, nice.
Yep, still art as well.
I know that she was going to have somebody take over the art in the next, like, story arc or something.
That's too bad because her art's been so
yeah.
good on
well,
it.
Well, she's still writing, though, but,
yeah.
but I think, yeah. Also, I want to mention some trades. The Crowded Volume 2 trade, which is such a great sort of road trip buddy comedy comic. That came out, as well as Farmhand Volume 3.
Right.
And then let's talk about last week's stuff. There was a few things. I guess the big one probably is... Dave, you can talk to DC stuff, because...
Yeah, sure.
You don't hate DC as much as I do.
Dark Knight's Metal was one of the big projects last year, overseen by Scott Snyder, and was very much like... The metal it referred to was the Nth metal of Hawkman's belt, but right. It was also metal. And this is absolutely that turned up to 11.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, the cover of one of the books of this had, Batman riding this, death motorcycle. Wasn't it, made out of, bones and stuff?
Yeah.
There's Wonder Woman has in this a chainsaw of truth instead of a lasso that she, forges, on, Hephaestus's forge.
Also, Sergeant Rock is in there smoking multiple cigarettes.
Sergeant Rock smokes multiple cigarettes. Superman is, slowly dying of anti-life, and he's got one crystallized arm from the anti-life equation, and his hair is long and rocker style.
Yeah,
everything in this is what I read, and I haven't read the whole thing because I just don't normally do the big Snyder crossover stuff.
Yep.
But I was listening to Anna reading it, and she was laughing every few pages,
yep.
And it was the good kind of laughter. It was this is so ridiculous and over the top, it's cool, and. Broadly speaking, I guess there's an invasion, of the regular DC universe, a takeover by the dark multiverse under, what do they call it? The Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah.
And it's sort of he's already taken over and reshaped the world, and there's these guys are going to have to form a sort of heroic resistance. And it definitely is this very larger-than-life thing. I think that the people who like the original are going to very much like this one. Greg Capullo gets to go to town with crazy metalhead designs.
Yeah.
Of all these characters, and what I was going to say is, conceptually, Snyder said that he wanted it to be kind of dark, as the death metal title. Say it's called Dark Knight's
Dark
Death
Knight's
Metal?
Death Metal, yeah.
But he did not want it to be grim and gloomy. I think he wants to have some fun with it, so that it walks this line between. Showing dark stuff but having fun with it,
mm-hmm.
Clearly enjoying the DC universe as a playground. So anyway, people should check that out. It's clearly going to be their big summer to do. And then I just wanted to mention, this is Thor number 5, another much anticipated one. The second issue of Strange Adventures, the Tom King book about Adam Strange. Kind of re-envisioning him much the same way Mr. Miracle was rethought in his as this kind of, you know, existential, maybe sometimes kind of meta character. Adam Strange in this setting that they're showing is he's become a pop hero. There's a book related to him and everybody thinks he's really awesome. He's a cool guy who jetpacks around and is thought to be a good guy. But in the flashbacks, we see that he seems to feel... You see these flashbacks to what looks like those kind of the 1950s tropes he represented of blowing away aliens on a, John Carter's Mars kind of thing. That maybe that was not exactly the truth of it, and he may be living with a guilt of having participated in pretty war crime-ish kind of stuff. This issue focuses on Mr. Terrific and Batman, who have gotten involved in sort of the mystery related to him. And Mr. Terrific is the point of view character as he's trying to sort of figure out... some stuff about Adam Strange and why Batman wants him to investigate him, and he's prominently featured in an interesting way. This is the thing I'll always say of Tom King, even when he doesn't draw me in, is that he is never approaching these characters in any sort of traditional way. He's always coming from a unique angle. He's not afraid to let Mr. Terrific be a sexy man. Who's lifting weights and shirtless and being sexy and smart. Throughout the whole thing, he's answering questions from his, T-spheres that are following him around and mm-hmm. are keeping him on his toes with, really bizarre and obscure trivia, which I also thought was Tom King showing off. look what I looked up on Wikipedia. Or, actually, I think he's very well-read. I think he was probably drawing on his own knowledge. But anyway, the first issue was really interesting, and I know people have been waiting a long time for that second one, and... I'm pleased to say, I think it will also please people the same way Thor 5 did. So,
So I want to talk about a couple books from Image and Boom. I was just looking up some info on them. One of them is A Man Among Ye. This is a Top Cow Image book written by Stephanie Phillips.
The and title is ironic because...
Because it is about lady pirates.
Yes.
But also, specifically, this is the thing I wasn't sure about. It is about Anne Bonny and Mary Read, who are legitimately real pirates.
I've heard of Anne Bonny. I read, when I was reading, making the sign for this, I was like, I don't know who Mary Read is.
I recognize that name, too. But basically, Mary Read seems to be a girl who stowed away aboard the ship, and Anne Bonny takes her under her wing, and they become pirates.
Okay.
I don't know how much of this is real, or if it's just like she took the basic idea of these two known female pirates and
running with a very fictionalized version.
But it's very much a pirate story. Like, it's, you've got the governor complaining about piracy. You've got the pirates being jerks to the people they kidnapped. You've got Anne Bonny is like the second in command, and most of the pirates do not like that because they don't like women on their ships.
Right.
It's a solid pirate book. I mean, it's no El Cazador, which is a 20-year-old reference to a pirate comic from CrossGen that we all loved, that Steve Epting art.
Yep.
But it's fun, and if you're looking for a pirate book, there's not a lot of pirate books.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like you said, good art on that as well.
Yeah.
I think sometimes there's these lost genres. You know, we talked about how steampunk is beloved and, like, has its own, like, massive subculture.
But it's crazy, there's, like, two comics.
But there's, like, two comics. So all they ever, usually, mostly all they ever do is just touch on it a little bit.
Yeah.
So, and same with pirates. If you like pirates, you're going to want to check out A Man Among Ye, probably.
Yeah. And the other one is Wind, W-Y-N-D.
Uh-huh.
From James Tynion, who also wrote for Boom. This is a Boom comic. He wrote Something is Killing the Children.
Oh, yeah.
Which we all like.
And he wrote the Alan Scott story in the Green Lantern special that I mentioned this week.
He also wrote The Woods for Boom, which I think is generally well-regarded.
Pretty prolific. What's he think he is, the next Cullen Bunn?
He does think he thinks he's the next Scott Snyder, actually. I believe he's Snyder's protege.
I like him better than Snyder.
The premise of this is a world where magical heritage is punished by death. So as a young boy, he must keep his true identity and pointy ears a secret from everyone in Pipetown, even if it means he'll never have the normal life he wants. But when his secret is threatened, Wind is forced to leave this home behind to embark on a dangerous quest that will put him at the heart of a royal conspiracy beyond his imagination. So it's big, epic fantasy.
What is it like? But it's a fantasy world, but if you have a magical heritage, you're in trouble?
Yeah.
There's like an Inquisition
if you're
or something?
An elf or a monster or something like that. And I think he is an elf or a monster or a werewolf or something like that. So he basically gets drawn to this thing. But the thing, the big selling point of this, beyond the fact there's just not a lot of time for all-ages fantasy comics,
yep,
is that this has art by Michael Dialanis, and it is stunning artwork. Like, there's some double-page spreads in here that are really impressive. There's a shot of him, like, plopping himself on a balcony, looking out over the city and eating his food, and it is just beautiful.
Oh, man, yeah.
It's a really pretty book. It's also $4.99 for, I feels like a 48-page book. Like, it is a big, thick first issue.
Is that going to go in our all-ages section when it's as we take it down, or is it, like,
know.
Just...
I don't know.
PG to PG-13 enough to not?
I don't know yet. I feel like it's actually all-ages, but it's super good. It's a creator-owned book, just like this. It originally was going to be a graphic novel, and they decided that since they didn't have as much stuff right now, they wanted to give the comics market something, so they sort of started releasing as single issues instead.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really fun, and Boom is putting out a lot of good stuff. And also, they didn't split off and make a new distributor, so you guys should buy Boom books.
So thanks for stability, Boom.
Yes. I think that's all our comics for the week.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty notable week. That's 2 weeks, but there's a lot of stuff.
There is a lot of stuff. It was a pretty good one. And I'm ready to see more of Marvel's Empire.
Yeah, me too. Unfortunately, they're still on that bi-weekly schedule where it's like graphic novels.
Yeah, we'll get to them when we get to it. Yeah, I think there's one more Prelude issue, and then we'll be off and running with it.
Yeah, I think it might be FF. It looks like the Avengers and FF are on a collision course.
Basically, if they keep up the interesting stuff that they're on, although, like, I don't particularly want to see it like an Avengers FF fight, but in the context that they're creating here,
yeah.
I'm interested.
Same. Yeah, so that'll do it for us this week. And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.